Tantor Audio, the Division of Recorded Books, presents The John Stone Action Pack, Books 7 through 9, Military Action Thriller Series, by Alan Manning and Brian Manning. Narrated by Roger Wayne. Black and White. Chapter 1. Bridgeport, Connecticut. The front door of the bar, Snake Oil, opened as a mixed collection of men and women staggered out, laughing and shouting into the night. The music faded away as the door swung shut behind them, cutting off the smoke that had trailed behind the group. John Stone moved closer to the building, giving the group a wide berth to pass. Scott Maverick turned his body to present a smaller surface and cut through the group of well-dressed and drunken club patrons. One of the men bounced off the muscular man and turned to face the obstacle. John tensed, watching as the situation sorted itself out. Still riding the high of an enjoyable evening, the man muttered an apology, patting Scott on the shoulder as his smile beamed. "Pleasant bunch," Scott said, wiping imagined dirt from his shoulder. Snake Oil's entryway blended in with the other almost high-end shops and boutiques along the block. Opting for an understated sign composed of steel letters spelling out the bar's name, backlit with an ebbing glow switching back and forth from blue to purple. Giving the bouncer out front a quick nod, John stepped through into the bar, Scott following several steps behind. Even though Scott was 20 years John's senior, both men stood a hair taller and had packed on almost as much muscle as the young man posted out front to keep the trouble inside to a minimum. Dressed in casual attire, jeans and button-up, short-sleeve shirts, John and Scott didn't match the style of Snake Oil's typical patrons. Preparing for trouble, both men carried weapons concealed in holsters, tucked into their waistbands. The people inside turned their heads to get a look at the newcomers, but when they saw what appeared to be a couple of dads there to drag their kids out of the establishment, they lost interest. John had enlisted Scott Maverick's help to track down the Alpha assets that had almost killed Parker Lewis in an attempt to eliminate anyone standing in the Order's way. He and his friends had tracked the assassins to South Africa, exposing their ties with Damian Blanchard. Unfortunately, John had lost the Alphas during the fight to take Blanchard down for good. Scott's experience in dealing with the Russians, fighting both against and alongside them, had allowed the retired homicide detective to build up a reliable network. The two assassins John was after were both Russian-born, with strong ties to the Order. Now, John was following a lead that one of Scott's informants had provided. That led both men to a bar with some shady Russian types who might know something about the Alpha assets. Scott nodded toward the bar. "Let's grab a seat and get us a couple of beers. Once we get settled in, we can make our way around the place and ask a few questions." "All right, but keep it discreet. I'm not trying to raise any red flags about why we're here."
"Relax, Stone. This'll be a cakewalk."
Scott tugged his belt, adjusting his pants.
"Besides, their flag isn't red anymore."
John rolled his eyes, then gestured with his head to the bar. The two broad-shouldered men found a couple of open stools. Following Scott's lead, John let out an audible groan as he sat, though he wasn't entirely sure if the other man was putting on much of an act. With big, artificial grins plastered on their faces, both men ordered a beer. They continued the act, pretending they were quite interested in the sports highlights on the TV behind the bar. But both men scanned the room and listened to nearby conversations for any hint of what they were looking for. A boisterous conversation pulled their attention toward a table in the middle of the bar.
"You hear that?" Scott asked.
"Yes. Russian."
John took a pull from his mug. Most of the conversations in the bar were in English, but John picked out the sounds of two men speaking Russian among the crowd. The distance and the music from the jukebox made it all but impossible to pick out any of the details of the back and forth, however.
That's a good sign, Scott said, tipping his mug as he took a gulp.
This isn't a slam dunk, John said. A couple of guys speaking Russian doesn't mean we're in the right spot.
But it definitely increases the odds, Scott said.
We should try to get closer, so we can listen in.
John spun on his stool and leaned his elbows on the bar behind him. Scott nodded and looked around the room.
Over there, two guys with fake designer shirts, he said to John.
You'll have to be more specific.
Scott pointed discreetly to a table in the middle of the bar. Two men were engaged in a rather lively dialogue, both raising their voices to be heard over the after-dinner crowd. John led the way, finding a table closer to the two men they had targeted. Scott sat down, leaning back in his chair, and continued their charade while eavesdropping on the unsuspecting men. John had his back to their marks. He was close enough to pick up bits of the conversation, but he had to rely on Scott to translate.
Jesus, the guy's Blancpain watch is also a fake.
Is there anything real about these two?
Keep your head in the game, John said.
Scott nodded and took a sip of beer as he listened intently, translating what he heard. Though John understood the language, Scott was an expert in their tongue and culture, having spent a large portion of his previous career working closely with the Russian government.
The bald one is going to buy a new car soon, Scott said. American muscle, fast, with terrible gas mileage. Fake Blancpain says it's not going to make him any luckier with the ladies.
John listened, trying to lock in on any details that would give him more information about the two men they were stalking.
The guy with a knockoff watch is whining about having to work later tonight.
Scott closed his eyes to focus on what they were saying.
No clues about what his job is. Now they're talking about soccer.
John took another sip of beer.
Sounds like they're going to talk about soccer for a while. I think maybe these guys don't know anything about our assassin friends.
You're probably right.
Scott waved to a waitress. He held two fingers up, gesturing with his beer mug before downing the rest of it. The waitress nodded with a smile and headed to the bar. A minute later, she arrived with two more beers.
I'm good with just the one, thanks, John said.
Scott pulled the two mugs closer.
That's good, because I forgot to order another for you.
John and Scott sat at the table for another 10 minutes, blending in while observing everything around them. Most of the people in the bar were ordinary people, leading ordinary lives, just there to unwind at the end of their workday. Another half hour passed, providing no new leads, or at least nothing that would get them closer to accomplishing their mission.
I don't think we're going to find anything here, John said. We should go.
Hold on, Stone. I've got a gut feeling about those soccer fans, Scott said. Watch my back. I'm going to try something.
He gulped down half of his third beer in a single pull and stood up, wiping an arm across his mouth. Scott walked straight toward the two Russian men. His 6'2" frame blocked out a good portion of the light cast on the table, and the two men stopped talking to stare at him. Both tried in vain to cut the big man down with their withering stares.
What can we do for you?
One of the men asked, his slight accent tinged with disdain. Scott smiled and swayed like a drunk, resting both of his work-worn hands on the table and gesturing back to John with his head.
My buddy and I were just looking for two highly trained assassins. They're from some kind of super-secret Russian training program. Maybe you've got some insider knowledge that you're willing to share?
The two men stared up at Scott, speechless. The bald man finally spoke up.
Sorry, sir. We really have no idea what you're talking about.
The man with the fake watch sneered. Besides, we don't talk to bacon. We just eat it. Scott backed away, his hands up in mock offense.
Hey, man, We ain't cops. We won't tell anyone you told us. He gave the two men an exaggerated, conspiratorial wink and put a hand on the fake watchman's shoulder in a friendly gesture. The man angrily brushed Scott's hand away and stood away from the table.
Get your paw off me, pig!
Buddy, I told you we ain't cops. Scott swayed slightly, maintaining his friendly drunk charade. And pigs have hooves, not paws. Fake Watch was shorter than Scott, but made up for the height disparity with bravado and alcohol-induced courage. John stepped in between the two to relieve the tension, pulling Scott away with a smile on his face, too.
Sorry about that. My friend just had one too many. You know how it is. We'll just head out and leave you two alone. No harm, no foul.
He dropped some money at the bar to cover their drinks, and he escorted his drunken friend toward the door.
What was that supposed to accomplish? John whispered.
Scott looked back and waved to the two men at their table, speaking under his breath.
Just keep walking and we'll see. I figure if they know something about our alphas, they'll probably have someone tail us. Or maybe they'll come outside to give us a warning. And if they don't, then they probably aren't connected. And we don't have to waste any more time here.
Before they reached the door, a mass of equal parts muscle and body fat moved to block the exit. The doorman crossed his hairy arms across his chest, resting them on a stained shirt that barely contained an ample belly. John and Scott maintained their ruse, feigning surprise and confusion. The music died down as a mini-chorus of wooden chair legs scraped across the floor. John and Scott looked back and saw more men in the bar standing to approach them. The two Russians, Baldy and Fake Watch, stayed in their seats, wearing smug grins in anticipation of the exciting show about to kick off.
Well, that didn't take long, John said.
What's our play now, Stone? Scott asked.
John looked at Scott, shocked.
What's our play? This was your idea.
No, the talking part was my idea. What's got us to the next step? You can take it from here.
John released Scott, who had sobered up and no longer played drunk. They turned to face each other and continued arguing, leaving their antagonists confused for a moment.
Hey, you brought us here. It was your bright idea to talk to those guys. Now I've got to clean this mess up because of you.
John jabbed a finger into Scott's chest with each sentence. Scott held his hands up to shoulder level.
Whoa. Can I just point out that the whole reason we're here in the first place is because you needed my help?
The burly doorman grew even more impatient, his go-to intimidation proving ineffective with the quarreling duo in front of him.
Unbelievable. I can see why you just sit around and drink all day, John said.
You know what? If you don't want my help, that's just fine by me. I'll just punch out that meathead blocking the door and go home.
It took 2 long seconds for the big man to register the words. He raised an eyebrow and turned to face Scott just as a fist slammed into his jaw. Even at his age, Scott was still a naturally large and powerful man who had kept himself in excellent physical shape. The blow dropped the ox instantly and took him out of the fight. Confusion spread through the bar like a wave. Patrons that had once been the aggressors now paused, unsure of what to do. John and Scott took the initiative, each singling out targets and overwhelming them. John grabbed 2 handfuls of silk shirt as he drove the closest man backward into 2 of his buddies. He released his grip and thrust his foot out, planting a boot into his opponent's chest and knocking all 3 to the ground. Scott raised an arm and stopped an attacker's haymaker, the impact sending a shock through the smaller man's body. With his blocking arm, Scott snapped a short hook across the man's cheek before driving a gut-busting uppercut into his solar plexus.
Looks like my night is picking up, Scott said over the fracas.
After the regular patrons had emptied the bar and the thugs all lay unconscious or writhing in pain, the 2 Russians at the table stood and bolted for the exit. John reached out and secured the collar of the bald man,
like a mother lion carrying her cub. Fake Watch found a clear path to the back door. Scott picked up a beer mug from the table and hurled it like a baseball toward the fleeing man. The glass impacted between his shoulder blades with a deep thump. The mug cracked into several chunks on the floor just as Fake Watch let out a shocked whimper and fell, curling up into a fetal position. He tried to reach one hand back to press it against the spot where the mug had struck him. John shoved Baldy into his seat, and Scott stalked the other man, taking long, deliberate strides toward him. Scott placed his foot on his quarry's head, pinning it to the filthy floor.
"You lied to us, Tovarish. I think maybe you and your friend know about the people we're looking for."
"Enough, man! I give up! We don't know anything,"
the man curled on the floor said.
"We don't know who you're talking about."
"You sure have a funny way of proving your innocence. Or was this all just a misunderstanding?" John said, gesturing at the writhing bodies sprawled throughout the bar.
"We don't know about any assassins. We work for Peter Fedorov,"
Baldy said to John. Scott barked out a genuine laugh.
"You gotta be kidding me."
"Who was that?" John asked.
"Fedorov is Russian mafia. He runs a couple of gambling halls in this area," Scott answered. "Minor player. Small fish in a small pond." John shook his head.
"So I take it they really don't know anything useful."
"Not useful to us, anyway."
The two big men turned and headed toward the front door, completely ignoring the low-level thugs they had just been interrogating. Baldy and Fake Watch watched them go, neither man daring to move or breathe in any way to antagonize them as they left.
"Two-bit gangsters," Scott said, pulling a pack of cigarettes from his pocket.
Scott's laughter bellowed in the night air as they crossed the street. John couldn't help but join him, even though their night had failed to produce anything of value in their search.
"Well, we got a lead on some Russian syndicate activity, at least," John said.
He shook his right hand out and wiped the blood off one of his knuckles with a thumb. Scott lit the cigarette pinched between his lips.
"Yeah, you're right. Maybe I'll come back here later when this other stuff is handled."
Short puffs of smoke escaped with each syllable as he spoke. John stared up at the half moon, glowing in the sky.
"Well, here's your silver lining, at least."
Chapter 2. Paris, Kentucky. In a small town, 18 miles northeast of Lexington, a four-story building stood in the middle of a clearing. Trees bordered the property on three sides, with a small paved road leading up to the roundabout in front. A small visitor lot was connected to a path that also led to an employee area in the back, where most of the vehicles were parked. It was at least a mile from the nearest commercial property, providing a pleasant, out-of-the-way feel, cutting down on the number of vehicles passing by. A late-model silver pickup truck crossed the visitor parking lot to head behind the building, its suspension groaning with the effort of absorbing the bounce from the speed bumps. Two men exited the truck, donning matching black baseball caps and sunglasses. The passenger squatted down, then stood up straight, twisting his body from side to side with a groan. The driver dropped the keys into his pocket and adjusted the ID badge clipped to his shirt pocket. An orange glow lit up the lobby as both men entered the building, making their way to the security checkpoint. Another pair of guards waited patiently at the desk, checking their ID badges. The driver, Greg Spears, nodded as he approached. The second man, Alonzo Trujillo, flashed a smile, joining the first.
"Hey, Greg. Didn't think I would see you in here today," one of the guards said.
Greg shrugged.
"What's up, Randy?"
"I was supposed to be off today, but they called me in. You know how it is."
"How's it going today, Randy?"
Alonzo asked, his smile still beaming.
"It's Tuesday."
They laughed politely at the joke. It was the same reply Randy always gave, changing the answer with the corresponding day. Greg and Alonzo dropped their keys and phones into small trays, sliding them along a table as they stepped through the metal detectors one at a time. Another guard was waiting to pass their items back. "Evening, Hannah," Alonzo said. "I see Randy trusts you enough with the critical task."
Greg winked. "Don't tell him we said it."
"But I feel safer with you in charge of the metal detectors."
Hannah chuckled.
"Don't worry, guys. He's not my boss."
Alonzo slipped his personal items back into his pockets and continued inside. Greg took a few extra moments patting his pants and shirt, obsessively ensuring that everything was in its proper place once more.
"Have a good night," Hannah said.
"Don't let any bad guys in here," Greg said.
"Unless they have beer," Alonzo called back over his shoulder. The pair continued down the hallway, deeper into the building.
Their smiles wavered as they turned the corner out of visual contact with the two security guards posted out front. Neither man felt good about what they were about to do. These people were their friends, but they had to remind themselves that the mission they were on superseded all friendships. Greg and Alonzo headed directly for the security office, a route they had taken many times in the past 9 months working for the company. It was the end of the day shift, and the hallways were suddenly crowded. Employees wearing suits and ties and other formal business attire moved in the opposite direction, smiling as they passed the two guards. After a quick left turn, they bounded down the stairs and followed a short corridor, passing a pair of doors before reaching their destination. The steel entryway to the security room stood facing them at the end of the hall. They continued ahead, their stride and postures casual, with no hesitation or aggression in their steps. Alonzo rapped at the door with his knuckles and turned the knob.
"Hey, wake up, you slackers!"
Two men sat inside the small office, leaving little room for the other two to enter.
"Yeah, screw you, buddy,"
Alan said, his eyes fixed on the computer screen as he typed.
"What are you doing here, Greg?" Brian asked. "Thought you were off today."
Greg shook his head.
"When they call, we gotta show up."
"Heard that," Brian said, before turning his eyes back to the security feeds. Seconds stretched out as Alan continued clicking away at the keyboard, while Brian scanned each of the individual monitors. Alonzo cleared his throat.
"So you fellas gonna just keep working all night? Or you wanna get your fat asses out of our seats and grab yourselves a beer?" Greg asked.
Alan let out a sharp chuckle.
"Just give me a couple minutes to finish this report, yeah?"
"I swear, he could lose 8 fingers and it wouldn't slow his typing speed down one bit,"
Brian said, pulling on his jacket. Everyone got a good laugh out of the friendly ribbing as Alan finally hit send. The computer let out a digital whoosh as he grabbed his jacket from the back of the chair.
"You two take it easy," Greg said.
Alan and Brian waved, closing the door behind them. Greg and Alonzo kept their eyes fixed to the feeds on the monitors spread across one wall, watching the other two guards make their way up the stairs and out of the building. Without any preamble, Alonzo picked up the phone on the desk and dialed an outgoing number. After 2 rings, someone picked up but didn't say a word.
"Clear for phase 2,
Alonzo said. "Roger. Phase 2, go," was all the other person said before ending the call. Alonzo turned and gave a quick nod. Greg spun his chair to face the terminal and tapped out a series of commands on the keyboard. The diagnostic program kicked off as a wall of text scrolled up, covering the screen in a blur of characters. Alonzo sat at another terminal and input the commands to shut down the cameras. Typically, security personnel didn't have access to control the cameras through the workstation, but strings had been pulled and palms had been greased, granting them the access to perform the tasks now.
"I'm all done here," Alonzo said.
One by one, all of the security monitors flickered and resumed what appeared to be their normal function. The digital repeating loop of footage would make it look like the cameras were filming just another regular, uneventful night.
"Yeah, me too."
Greg's program locked down all outgoing transmissions, preventing the security system from calling out for help while it displayed a faked diagnostic subroutine. The two men sat in the office, continuing the charade of performing their usual tasks and waited.
Clear for phase two.
Roger.
Phase two, go.
Cameron Knight thumbed the end call button and rolled his head in a semicircle to stretch his neck. He sat up straight in the passenger seat of the black SUV, eyes closed as he took slow, measured breaths. He pointed two fingers toward the street. The driver, Ricky, nodded and pulled the vehicle out of the parking garage into traffic, heading toward the Target building. The 5-minute drive passed in a flash. They turned onto a narrow, winding street toward a security check booth. Ricky rolled his window down as he stopped behind the flimsy bar, lowered to block their path.
Good evening. What can I do for you?
The man in the security booth asked. His eyes squinted against the rays of the setting sun.
Here for a package pickup, the driver said, handing over a sheet detailing what they were there for.
The guard scanned the page, then looked into the SUV. He eyed the driver, passenger, and two others, a man and a woman, sitting in the back seat.
A little late for a pickup, isn't it?
Workday is just about over, the guard said. Cameron gave him a quizzical look and checked the time on his watch.
Quitting time already? All the more reason to knock this out quick. It's our last stop.
The guard held the sheet of paper in his hand as he continued eyeing the occupants of the SUV. Cameron maintained his composure, but he feared that Ricky's nerves were on edge.
I'll call this in. Just give me a sec, the guard said.
The occupants of the vehicle smiled and nodded. Cameron could feel Ricky's demeanor shift as his shoulders relaxed. Alonzo rested his elbows on his lap, fingers laced as he bounced one of his feet. He stared at the lines and wrinkles on his palms and fingers. A buzzing alert snapped him back to the present. His hand hovered over the phone as it buzzed again. He picked up the receiver, already knowing what the call would be about.
Security!
His jaw tightened as he listened to the voice on the other end.
Okay, I'll check the logs now, he said,
sitting quietly for a few moments and pulling in a deep breath to slow his heart rate.
Yes, they're on the list, and cleared to enter.
Alonzo chuckled at the response from the man on the other end.
Yeah, they really like to push things out to the last minute, huh?
He hung up the phone and nodded to Greg, who had stood from his chair and paced around the room during the call.
It's game time, Greg said,
more to himself, before he left the room. The man in the security booth rested the handset back on the cradle.
You're cleared to go on in. Just follow this road and turn right when it splits. They'll take you to the back loading area.
Thank you, sir, Cameron said, looking past the driver.
And following the road as it turned, the black SUV headed around to the loading area, parking near the loading entrance door. Cameron and the driver stepped out of the vehicle, followed by Baker Farrell and Katerina Donovan from the rear passenger seats. All four were dressed in dark coveralls and black ball caps, each with the embroidered logo of a forgettable delivery company. The two from the back seats shouldered large, heavy duffel bags. The four-person team subconsciously stacked on either side of the door with precision gained from long hours of practiced repetition. Cameron knocked twice at the entrance, and it opened with almost no delay. Greg held the heavy steel door open as the others entered past him. Once inside, Greg fell into step behind Cameron, following his lead. Katerina unzipped her duffel bag and handed a pair of shotguns to Greg. The Mossberg shockwaves were ultra-compact, intimidating pieces, colored matte black and adorned with tactical modifications. The others pulled masks over their faces as they walked. The cameras had been disabled, but they didn't want to run the risk of anyone's recognizing any of them face-to-face. They had deemed it necessary to compromise Greg and Alonzo's identities for the mission to succeed. Both men had volunteered for the task, and had already taken steps to disappear afterward. Cameron led his team around the labyrinth of hallways with a familiarity gained from studying and memorizing the floor plans long before. The route took them back toward the security room.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?